And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is politics and leadership. Each of my guests is discussing his subject matter and how it relates to leading, whether it's leading in business, politics, or in life. My next guest is the executive director of a nonprofit foreign policy and a foreign policy analyst and a former senior analyst in the polling division of the 1988 Bush campaign. He espouses that how American presidents and diplomats have sold out our interests and our security to the Arab interests, Saudi Arabia in particular. We'll discuss his book, The Arab Lobby. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Dr. Mitchell Bard is the executive director of the nonprofit American-Israeli Cooperative Enterprise and a foreign policy analyst who lectures frequently on U.S. Middle East policy. Dr. Bard is also the director of the Jewish Virtual Library, the world's most comprehensive online encyclopedia of Jewish history and culture. For 3 years, he was the editor of the Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, a weekly newsletter that goes out on U.S. Middle East policy. Prior to working for the AIPAC, Dr. Bard served as a senior analyst in the polling division of the 1988 Bush campaign, as I said. Dr. Bard has appeared on Fox News, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, interestingly enough, the Jenny Jones Store, Al Jazeera, and all sorts of local and national TV and radio shows like this. He's the author of 18 books. He holds his PhD in political science from UCLA. He holds a master's degree in public policy from Berkeley, and he received his bachelor's degree in economics from the University of California at Santa Barbara right up the road. Welcome to the show, Mitchell. How are you today?
Great to be with you, Bill.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest and for being a thought leader in this area, because you're out there on a limb by yourself there. I want to just set the stage. So in 1948, Israel became a nation, and within 13 hours of Israel becoming a state, the United States allied itself with Israel. The United States is certainly one of the earliest, if not the earliest country, to recognize Israel as a sovereign nation. So you contend that most Americans are hoodwinked into believing that there's an Israeli lobby at work here in the United States. You assert that the Arab lobby is more powerful and more pervasive than the Israeli lobby. So state your case.
Well, there is a pro-Israel lobby. There's no question about that. It does have some degree of influence, but there is never any discussion about the Arab lobby, and that is in many ways older and in some ways more influential. What I mean by the Arab lobby is two main groups. One is the domestic groups, the Arab and Muslim Americans, non-evangelical anti-Israel Christians, and some Arabists in the government, who mostly lobby for the Palestinian cause, but they do it mainly in a negative way. That is, they don't lobby for peace or for aid to the Palestinians. They mostly focus on condemning Israel and trying to drive a wedge between the United States and Israel. The more influential part of the lobby is really the oil lobby, driven by Saudi Arabia, the Arabist oil companies, and defense contractors, and they're really a dangerous force. They undermine our interests in the Middle East, they undermine our values, and they threaten our security.
All right. Well, Mitchell, I mean, it's an interesting point of view. Now, the United States has never really had what you would call a great Middle Eastern policy. I mean, we have been absolutely bumbling fools in that for over 60 years. If you take a look at some of the involvement that we've had in Middle East politics, we've been a failure. There was the Shah of Iran, eventually led to the Iranian hostage situation. We supported Osama bin Laden in his fight against the Soviets in Afghanistan, and we know what happened there. Saddam Hussein was a United States approved appointee for Iraq. Then we overthrew President and I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's al-Khawari in Syria as far back as 1949, and that set up a military regime under Colonel Zaim. And then, of course, Lebanon. We've been in Lebanon twice in the last 60 years, once in 1956 and then again in 1982, and we're responsible for King Hussein there. So our politics, we may be influenced by the Arab lobby, but we're certainly not doing a good job of promoting their causes in that region, are we?
Well, we do promote some of their causes. Part of the problem is that the Arabists in the State Department basically see oil as the only interest in the Middle East and believe that the way to secure the oil is to basically sell out American values and interests. And what has happened in particular with the case of the Saudis is we made a Faustian bargain where the Saudis care only about keeping their royal heads on their royal shoulders, and they know that the United States is the only country that can do that for them. And in exchange, they sell us oil, but they don't do it as a favor. They treat it as a kind of drug that we're addicted to, and they manipulate the price of oil in such a way that they make money, but don't let the price of oil get too high to encourage us to invest in alternative sources of energy.
All right, Mitchell, but let me take the other side of this argument, if I can, for just a minute, because the Arabs are no fools. They see how the game is played here in the United States, that large lobbying groups need to be in place there. And so, you know, they just see how the game is played. They fall right in. Most Americans would agree that the lobbyists play a huge role in U.S. politics, both domestic and foreign policies. How can you blame the Arabs for creating their own lobby to participate in our politics?
Oh, I don't blame them at all for participating. The issue isn't whether it's legal or fair or proper for them to participate. The problem is the implications for what they are lobbying for. And again, in the case of the Saudis in particular, you have them working against our efforts to make peace in the Middle East. You have them as the leading funders of terrorism around the world. You have them undermining our values by running what is probably one of, if not the most oppressive societies in the world, an apartheid regime that treats women as second-class citizens. And this is really the problem. It's not that they shouldn't be allowed to express their views or try to influence the government. The problem is that Americans aren't really aware of what they're doing and what they are promoting and what it means for U.S. interests.
Well, let's talk about those U.S. interests, because one of the big things being purported by our government is that we need a base in the Middle East, a secure base. If we need to be present there militarily, that we can do that. Sure, we have the Sixth Fleet that is floating around in the Indian Ocean. We have a base at Diego Garcia and, of course, our allies in Israel. But that's not enough if we really have to police that area of the world. Now, there's a whole discussion of whether we should be the policemen of the world or not. But setting that aside, that is our policy today. We need land bases in Saudi Arabia to be able to control the Suez Canal, to be able to control the oil interests, and also the peacekeeping interests in that region. What do you say to that?
Well, we certainly need bases, and we've moved most of our people out of Saudi Arabia because of their opposition. Now we're faced in other Gulf states. We do need bases there, and that does mean that we have to make certain compromises, but they need us a lot more than we need them, and there's no reason for us to compromise on our principles and our interests. And historically, what's happened is that the United States has put our troops in places like Saudi Arabia to keep those people safe, as we did in the first Gulf War when 500,000 of our troops went and saved the Saudis. But they don't see that as necessarily something they should reward with helping us in what is important to us.
All right. My guest is Mitchell Bard. He's author of the book, The Arab Lobby, The Invisible Alliance That Undermines America's Interests in the Middle East. So let's take this a step farther, because we've had 9/11/2001. It was a pivotal event in U.S. history, and there's been a change in sentiment in the United States against Muslims in general in this country. You know, protests against the mosque being built at the site of the Twin Towers. There was absolute elation over the assassination of Osama bin Laden, who, it should be noted, is a member of the Saudi royal family. Don't politicians who have to be wary about the popular sentiment at home and be worried that this predominantly anti-Muslim sentiment has to be carried through in every action that they vote on?
Well, I think we have to be very careful about distinguishing between most Muslims and the extremist radicals. And that's a very small percentage of the Muslim population around the world, but they're a very dangerous one. And we certainly have to be wary of those who are extremists. And again, my problem with the Saudi lobby is that they're promoting the extreme version. They are spending billions of dollars to build mosques and schools where they teach a very extreme version of Islam. Just to give you one example, there's a school where on the blackboard they had a map of the Middle East that was missing just one country, and you might guess that that country was Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And in their 11th grade textbook, it said, on the day of judgment, the trees will say, O Muslim, O servant of God, here is a Jew hiding behind me, come here and kill me. or kill him. Another textbook said that the apes are the people of the Sabbath, the Jews, the swine are the unbelievers of Jesus' table, the Christians. Now, this wasn't in a madrasa in Afghanistan or Pakistan. This was a school funded by the Saudis in Fairfax, Virginia. And this is the kind of thing that's being taught through Saudi-funded schools and mosques, and that's what's dangerous.
And that is dangerous, but how far off base is that from the teachings of the Old Testament of the Bible that support slavery, that support, subjugating women and those kinds of things? I mean, there are some writings even in our Old Testament of the Bible that are, if you look at them in the context of today, a little bit archaic and might be considered radical.
Well, that's certainly true. The difference is that the Saudis actually practiced them and tried to carry them out. In the case of the Saudis, for example, they just beheaded a woman this week on the charge of witchcraft and sorcery. They do treat the women in a second-class manner, in a very apartheid-like manner. They discriminate against Christians and Jews. So they call for jihads against infidels. They treat gays as people who can be stoned to death. I mean, all of these things are not just words, but actually deeds they carry out. And I think that's one of the big differences between some of the things that are in the Christian Bible or the Jewish Torah that are seen as archaic.
And that's an important differentiation. My guest is Mitchell Bard. So, Mitchell, let's return back to U.S. foreign policy, particularly as it pertains to the Middle East. You do a good job of looking back over history and looking at which administrations did better or worse in their approach towards the Middle East. So give us a rundown. Which presidents in recent history have done a better job with regard to Middle Eastern politics?
Well, I think that Bill Clinton did a pretty good job in trying to bring about peace in the Middle East, and two peace agreements were signed during his watch between Israel and the Palestinians initially and with the Jordan. George W. Bush, I think, did a good job for part of his term in trying to promote the idea of democracy and freedom in the Middle East. The problem that we see today is that elections do not equal democracy. And that it's not just one person, one vote, one time. And what we want to see in the Middle East is freedom for the people of that region. And what's happening instead is you have elections bringing about what looks like radical Islamists who are not interested in giving freedom to the people.
All right. Well, that begs the question, what about our current president, President Barack Obama? Where does he stand on the scale right now with his Middle Eastern policies?
Well, I think most people thought that for the first couple of years, his policy was largely disastrous, that he managed to alienate just about everybody. He came into office trying to be the anti-George Bush to appeal to the Muslim world. And the latest polls that just came out this week show he's very unpopular in the Muslim world because they see him as not fulfilling the promise they saw. He alienated the Israeli population by a number of positions he took toward Israel that undermined their interests, and overall just undermined his own interest in creating the opportunity for peace. So in his first 2 years, I think it was largely a disaster. And the last year, he's begun to make some changes in the right direction, but there's still a lot of problems with what he's trying to do. And the failure to recognize, for example, the incredible threat that Iran poses to everybody in the Middle East and Western interests.
Well, his position on Iran in particular is that he's going to rely on Israel to take care of that little problem and sweep it under the rug so it doesn't have to become his problem.
Well, it's already America's problem, and I don't think Israel wants to be the one to have to solve the problem because it's not just Israel. If you look at the documents that came out in WikiLeaks, in fact, the country that was screaming for the United States to attack Iran was actually the Saudis, because they're the ones who are the most afraid, as are the other Arab neighbors. So the problem with Obama's policy is he has not been tough enough on the Iranians. He's been reluctant to impose the tough enough measures that might actually force them to give up their nuclear program.
My guest is Mitchell Bard, author of the book, The Arab Lobby. So, Mitchell, we've laid out what the problem is. We understand it very well. What are some solutions?
Well, I think part of the solutions have to do with changing our reliance on Middle Eastern oil and Saudi oil in particular, and standing up to the Saudis and not simply selling them billions of dollars of weapons without expecting them to change their policies, not to be tolerant of their apartheid policies and human rights abuses. All of these things are steps that will help show that the United States actually stands for the values and interests that it usually says it does.
All right. Well, let's return to the arms for just 1 minute if we can, because we've sold F-16 fighters, advanced weaponry, to Saudi Arabia, and yet it sits on the ground and it's absolutely inoperable because we don't have they don't have the parts or the technical know-how to keep that equipment in place. So looking at that and looking at the investment that we've made there, I don't see how that is necessarily to their best interest, the Saudis' best interest, to have airplanes sitting around that are inoperable.
Well, look, the Saudis just want to have the latest toys. They want to believe that they have all of the best weapons in their possession to protect themselves, but they know in the end that their army is too small and too weak to really stand up to its main enemies. In the case of the Gulf War, it was Iraq, and now it's Iran. They know that the only chance they have is if the United States saves them. We sell them the weapons in part because it's a way of getting our oil money back. They sell us the oil, we sell them arms, and it works out as a bit of a trade. It doesn't exactly even out. It also helps the Pentagon in some ways in lowering the price of some of the weapons they want. But in terms of improving American security, it doesn't help us at all, and I think undermines it by just reassuring the Saudis that they don't have to do anything to promote our interests.
All right. My guest is Mitchell Bard, author of the book, The Arab Lobby, The Invisible Alliance That Undermines America's Interests in the Middle East. Mitchell, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Arab Lobby?
I think what I'd like them to understand is that there is a competition going on to influence U.S. Middle East policy. Much of it takes place behind the scenes where they don't see what's going on, that this is why I call it an invisible alliance, not because it's conspiratorial, but just because you don't know about the lobbyists the Arab lobby are paying for to lobby for them. You don't know about what the Saudis are doing in their meetings at the White House and State Department, and that this is having a negative effect on our interests, our values, and ultimately our security, primarily through the Saudis' ongoing support for terror.
Mitchell, if you piqued the interest of some of my listeners and they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, The Arab Lobby, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can go to the Jewish Virtual Library for the most extensive information on Jewish history, politics, and culture. And I have my own MitchellBard.com website where you can learn more about the other 21 books I've written.
Mitchell, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.